and welcome to another Fool's Daily. I'm joined again by Lee and Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
And I wanted one of them to do the hello, welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily, but Matt said, no, I can't do it.
I'll do the Dobby Goals one then.
Oh, all right then. And Lee just kept quiet, going, don't pick me, don't pick me, don't pick me.
I'm shy.
Sort of like my daughter at school, really.
Yeah,
don't
bless him. He's shy and retarded.
Yeah, I resemble both of those remarks.
But you can look down on them from a vast height, mate.
Yeah, I'm just going to wait until I'm close enough for Spooner and remind him of the comment.
Should he?
I see. Let me look into the future. I see pain in Spoon's future. So, today, we're going to talk about old school gaming. And not just old school gaming, really old school gaming. Taking it back to how I started in the whole gaming thing when I was but a mere 13 years old.
I would mock you, but you're only slightly older than me, so...
Yeah, it's still 31 years. 31 years ago.
I was thinking about it the other day. It's scary.
And we're going to talk RPGs.
Yay.
Specifically two RPGs. We're going to talk about Through the Breach, which is the Malifaux RPG, and we are going to talk Paranoia, which is on Kickstarter at the moment. Or the latest version is on Kickstarter at the moment.
I was going to say, because there's been... Is it two sort of...
Oh, yeah, lots. I mean, I first played it back in the 80s, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I played it when I was younger in a roleplay group, but not as far back as the 80s, I don't think.
A long time ago. So, should we talk Through the Breach first?
Yeah.
As that has physical product.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, it's a role-playing game set in Malifaux. There we're done.
Yeah. In theory, what's not to love? You know, Malifaux's an intensely character-driven format. It's, you know, in its tabletop iteration, obviously it's a miniature game, but even kind of some of the lowliest minions and peons within it are... They have a unique character, so I could see that it was always lending itself to something allowing a bit more character development, because you know the games are isolated pickup games. There's no character development there. There's no campaign system per se for it. So I guess this is going to bridge that gap to a degree.
Yes, I think so.
And the biggest thing is, especially for an RPG for me, is the background and fluff that you've already got. Laid out. I mean, I haven't actually even laid my hands on the Through the Breach books, but the stuff you've, the fluff and the background you've got from, you know, just the Malifaux universe already, just as a figure game,
yeah,
is immense.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for us. We're already, you know, I talk a lot about sort of the 40k side, but when you've been gaming a system for a while, you do, you know, you're invested in the canon, so to speak, you know, the backstory, the fluff and all that sort of thing. So it's not like we're going to have to learn something new for that.
No, I mean, no, you aren't. I mean, you're... It very much is a game set in that universe, in that city, dealing with the issues that have come up through the whole... of the miniatures game.
Yeah.
And you're just very, very small cogs in that giant machine as players. Now, we should point out, we haven't actually played it yet.
No.
We haven't actually created characters yet.
Nope.
Though we have got plans to do it. But have you guys actually seen the books?
No. Yeah, I had a flick through when we went down to Oktoberfolk, because I had them both at Wayland Games. So I took an opportunity after the 20-minute drubbing from Panzer to go and have a wander through and have a flick through the books. And they're of a, you know, just from a quality and print perspective, as good, obviously, as you'd expect from the kind of the printers that we've had the Malifaux books from. Layout looked good. You've It is kind of almost following, you know, that traditional role play bent in the fact you've got a player's manual and a games master, although in this, you know, it's a Fate Master for Through the Breach, a separate manual for the Fate Master. So it all seems fairly traditional, kind of from that first look for me.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is a traditional style RPG in the fact that, you know, you do have the player's book and you have to create characters and things. I think certainly from flicking through, the way that you create characters is interesting because you are a fated, and so therefore you can change history or change what the universe has got planned for you by changing, you know, those sorts of events and things using your own little custom fate deck or set of cards that you have, because every player has his own little set of cards, effectively a control hand, if you will. But I think that the character, how you create characters, seems quite interesting because it's almost done as a story mechanism, if that makes sense. Rather than, say, in Dungeons & Dragons, you create a set of stats and then you create your character based on those stats. In Through the Breach, you sort of, the story determines what your character is good at.
Right. So it's almost the reverse way around, because traditionally, you'd create a stats and then you would create your kind of backstory of that's your character is at this point because of a backstory that you then develop. So with this, the backstory creates the character.
Yeah. I mean, it spells it out very much. So creating a character, okay? So step one is concept. I'll just read from it. A player character in Through the Breach is more than just a collection of numbers and suits on a piece of paper. The goal of any campaign is to create a thriving world in which the fated protagonists, or anti-heroes, come to life in a narrative. They will grow as people as they respond to the trials and tribulations of outrageous fortune. The following steps will flesh out a character, but it can help to have an idea of what the player wants to play during the game. And so it's all about what you want to do with the game going forward is where you sort of are going to end up.
Mm.
And you can. Did you ever play the what was it called? The Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay RPG.
Yes.
Yes.
Where you had effectively, you didn't have classes in the same way that you had, a fighter or a rogue or something. You had professions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with experience, you could get a better job and.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of that. There are various, they call them stations.
Mm-hmm.
And you pick your station, so you get things like, you could be Bayou born. You weren't necessarily born on the Bayou as much as stolen a baby and raised by the gremlins.
Mm.
Or you're a blacksmith, or a madam. One of your parents worked in the medical profession, that sort of thing. You know, it's really sort of fleshing out the background.
Yeah,
and then you have effectively what I would call, what they call pursuits. So you can be an academic,
mm-hmm.
or a criminal, or a drudge, a grave robber, or even a guild guard, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of effectively your profession in the city of Malifaux.
Yeah.
And it gives you, different access to things. And it seems, certainly reading through it. I mean, again, I've not created any characters yet because I sort of want that to be the first time we actually play is to be the first time that I actually create a character.
Yeah.
But it certainly seems to forge its way through very interestingly. But the real interesting thing is it massively lends itself to campaigns.
Yeah.
The whole thing, I think, is about campaigns. And I think that's one... I wonder if that's one of the things that's going to restrict its growth, in that because it's set up to play campaign, you have to find a group that you can dedicate, a group and a time slot you can dedicate to playing. I'm hopeful that now my Wednesday evenings are going to be free going forward, that I can turn Wednesday night into role-playing nights.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that sort of lends itself to campaigns. But I am looking forward to it, and I'm sure that we'll talk about it again in the future, especially once we start actually playing.
Yeah, well, I've sort of put my hand up to be the Fate Master with that one, haven't I? So with exactly that problem in mind, what I want to have a look at is, you know, obviously getting my hands on it and going through it, but to come up with a process that will allow, to use a kind of a movie vernacular, an ensemble cast, which means people can kind of drop in and drop out for certain sessions and certain, you know, trying to, so it's episodic, so that we, not, you know, so it doesn't fall on its ass if everybody's not available for a session. So if somebody's not available, then, you know, there can be a reason why they're not part of the group for this particular episode.
Yeah.
And that way, hopefully, that will allow us to keep going with, you know.
We used to sort of do it when we did a lot of role play, that we'd always have a couple of NPCs along.
Yeah.
And they would be rolled out characters that the sort of DM or GM, whatever you would call him, would have. And if someone new turned up or someone couldn't make it, you know, or just generally, then you'd always have a drop in, drop out. You know, so like, say your maximum group would be seven, we'd have an eight-person party. Just, you've got that chance then that, you know, someone turns around and says, I can't be there this week. You've got the ability to drop in and out without, like you say, ruining the whole group.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that it was also going to, certainly, and I don't know whether this is true for the actual playing, but certainly for character creation and stuff, I'm becoming more and more convinced that you actually want to be face-to-face with your group.
Mm.
You want to have that human interaction. You know, playing over Skype is fine, especially with tools like Fantasy Grounds or whatever it's called.
Mm.
What is it? Yeah, Fantasy Grounds. But I think for kicking off adventure, there's nothing. Nothing like playing face to face. I remember fondly Dungeons & Dragons sessions where, you know, on a Sunday afternoon we'd go around someone's flat and you'd just, you know, big bag of chips and stuff, and you'd be sitting and you'd just play games, or, you know, the Dungeons & Dragons all afternoon.
Yeah.
Because it's the social interaction sort of thing. But,
And on a different note, on the, you say about the Fantasy Grounds is now a part of Steam as well.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so you can run, I'm sure I saw it on Steam, so you've actually got a stronger connection, and as long as you've got Steam accounts, you can sort of run through that.
Oh, cool. Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm. But yeah, but I have to admit, my experience with RPGs, I've not played kind of over the magic talking box in the corner. It's always been done kind of face-to-face, exactly that sort of scenario that you described, Mike, of, you know, a group of friends get together, you know, with coffee, pop, beer or whatever, snacks, and...
Yeah, you're sitting around, flipping a few cards, rolling some dice.
Yeah, and, you know, you drop in and out of the game sort of for 20 minutes to have a chat about something else, and then you come back in and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I must admit, I'm looking forward to doing some role-playing. And, you know... Just getting together and hanging, and then doing some gaming.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be cool. So there's that. But the other one is still on Kickstarter and still has umpteen days to run. So we're not going to have it for ages. Is the reboot of Paranoia, which is being done by Mongoose, have the license now. Now, how much do you guys know about Paranoia?
I was going to say, I played it when I first started at about 16 or 17.
So just a couple of years ago for you?
Yeah, no, I'm not that much younger than you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I played it kind of first time round, which would have been kind of mid to late 80s. Vague recollections, but not a massive amount, other than It's kind of a dystopian, slightly sort of darkly comedic world of kind of disempowered people that were being run by the computer, so to speak.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're exactly right. And the setup is that your character is one of six clones, so you can die, and in Paranoia you die a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Who are a troubleshooter, and generally, I mean, certainly in the game, all the games that I played, you're a red level troubleshooter, which means you are the lowest of the low.
Mm.
The toilet needs plunging. You're going to be the toilet plunger, literally the thing that gets stuck down the toilet. And that's what the whole game is about. But because there's been, and I can't remember whether it was a nuclear war or however, you don't know anything about the outside world. And so your whole life is dependent on what the computer tells you. And the computer will tell you to do contradictory things. So I remember one particular game where we had to get a form to fill in. And the only way to get a form to fill in was to get to fill in the form that enabled you to get the form. But you couldn't get the form to fill in the form because you hadn't filled in the form. And the computer's getting the computer's getting more and more upset at you, and eventually that's it. And of course all of your fellow players are trying to curry favor with the computer by effectively dobbing you into the computer.
No, you see, this just sounds like the civil service at the moment.
As a communist... Well, I don't know. Are you populated with communist traitors?
Well, I wouldn't like to comment on the political ambitions of some of my colleagues, but what you've just described could well be an average day at work.
So, I mean, it was all about... The communists, and you didn't know anything. One of the best adventures I ever played was we went up in a lift. We had to go and investigate something, so we got in a lift, and we went up in the lift, and then we opened the door. And it turned out the lift was a space shuttle, and we just opened the door, and we all explosively decompressed. And that was it. That was Clone One, dead.
Yeah.
It's that sort of game.
I mean, for those that haven't had any experience of it but do watch films, the analogy, and it's every time I see the film, it reminds me of it, is in the film Galaxy Quest, Sam Rockwell's character in Galaxy Quest could be a clone from Paranoia. He doesn't really know what's going on. He knows he's vulnerable. He knows it's all going to go horribly wrong. He knows he doesn't play a major part, but he's kind of along for the ride anyway.
Yeah, you are Red Shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've read the book, if you've read the book Red Shirts, which is a very interesting take on the whole Red Shirt Star Trek philosophy, that works as well. So they're rebooting this. They're bringing it into the 21st century. So they've streamlined the game's mechanisms, and they're designing it very much for how people tend to play role-playing games now, which are one-off sessions.
Mm.
Ooh.
Someone's got a phone.
Yeah, bear with me.
All right. So Lee's going to answer the phone.
Yeah.
So they're designing it, you know, for...
pickup games.
That sort of... Yeah, basically. For, you know, you're going to play a 3-4-hour session, and... that's it. And, you know, you could have an ongoing narrative if you want. I can't think of a game I ever played of it when I was younger where I had any clones left.
No.
So, you know, you don't get into your so much into your character as you're just having fun.
Yeah.
With your opponents. And the way that you're going to design characters is optimal for that. So this is the suggested character creation system to give you some idea. You arrange the players in a circle and you give each one a blank character sheet. In the first round, you pick the player to the left of the Games Master, and he chooses a skill for their character and marks it on his sheet, so he gets a point. So, you know, if you choose guns, you get guns plus one.
Yeah.
Then that player chooses any other player in the group, and they get the skill that that player just picked at minus one. This second player then swears. When they have finished swearing, the second player chooses a different skill for their character and gets it at plus 1 point. And then they pick a different player. They can't pick a player who's already had a skill.
Yeah.
And they get the skill at minus one. So the second player might pick computers. They get computers plus one. And another player gets computers minus one.
Yeah.
And then it goes all around. So you can see how the players are going to bond together.
Yeah.
As a well-mannered team. Then you go into round two. And it's plus 2 points and minus 2 points. Round three, round four, round five. And what you end up with is every player has a character sheet with a minimum of five and a maximum of 10 non-zero skills in it.
Yeah.
So basically, that's what things you're good at and the things you're very, very, very bad at and you should never, ever, ever, ever try.
Yeah.
And a really good selection of grudges against the other players who've made you work like this.
Yeah, because I guess that's something that we haven't really made clear, is you play with a group of people and it is nominally a cooperative game. But
yes,
actually,
yes, nominally.
But it's
nominally.
Not as well. You're trying to work towards potentially a common goal, but you're scrabbling over the other players in your group at the same time to,
yeah,
as you said, curry favour with the computer and be, you know, top dog within that group of disparate losers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just imagine Rimmer from Red Dwarf.
I was going to say, that's a pretty good sort of description.
No, that is an excellent description. You are all Rimmer.
Yeah.
Just backstabbing your way, trying not to get... But the problem is you have to rely on your friends to not get you killed.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be very funny to play. The Kickstarter seems to be an exceptionally good deal.
Yeah.
So for 60 quid, which includes shipping, you can get the director's cut level. which enables you to, which gives you, a box set PDF, all of the stretch goals as PDF, the box set with all the box contents, the playtest PDFs, the annotated PDFs, which is basically the director's commentary,
yeah,
and a pack of the aforementioned forms so that you can make your players fill them in.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a few stretch goals that are like 5 quid each, you know, add-ons.
Yeah.
Which give you things like mutant powers, a new adventure, and the next stretch goal they're reaching for is a secret society one. Membership of a secret society is treason. You, as a loyal troubleshooter, are a member of a secret society.
It's going to be a really good kind of beer and pizza night game, isn't it?
It is completely a beer and pizza, because, you know, 20 minutes to set up your characters and then you can just play the adventure for 3 hours. And the chances are, at the end of the adventure, you'll all be dead.
Yeah. But I've had a bloody good laugh getting there.
The hope is that you will have a lot of fun doing it. So that's running on Kickstarter at the moment. So you can just search for Paranoia RPG. It's under Matt Sprang's name, who is Mongoose Publishing.
Yeah.
So that's fun. I'm doing that Kickstarter because and the beauty of it is you only need one person in your group to do the Kickstarter.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you get everything that you need in the Kickstarter, especially as you're getting PDFs of everything.
Yeah.
So you can always, you know, your mates can always have the PDFs that on their iPad or other generic tablet devices.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it'll be good fun and something I'm looking forward to for next year.
No, I must admit, that's the one game that sort of we played that I thought was, you know, we could never get to play it enough. And we used to use that as a little sort of thing between the big missions of like D&D and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a brilliant game. I mean, I remember our DM was really good at it, and he had a table set up. So we all sat at one end of the table. He sat at the head of the table, and he had two angle poise lamps, and they were positioned so they were shining right in your face whenever you looked at him, so you couldn't actually see him. You just saw the lights.
Cool.
And they, at old games days, back in the day, in, when they used to run them in the Horticultural Hall in London, they used to have a guy running Paranoid Emmets, because GW had the license at one point.
Yeah.
Is that back in the day when you were hanging with, like, Rick and Jervis and all them people?
Yeah, Andy Chambers.
Yeah. Clang!
Shooting water pistols at Andy Chambers.
Yeah.
But, you know.
That's cool.
Back before there was a 40K.
Yeah. Okay. Nice for you.
But, you know.
Well, it must have been nice for you.
Well, you know. You know people.
I know you.
Isn't anyone... Yeah. It's all about me.
Yeah.
it's a good laugh. And as a GM, it's a good game to GM because you can sort of do lots of interesting things with props and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, provided your players are willing to go with it, you can end up with them doing very silly things. You know, the aforementioned toilet plunger attached to the head, pretending to be a Dalek, etc.
Yeah.
You say about the forms and stuff. I remember when we did it, I don't know if it was the forms from the game, but I know Matt used to do it. And to approve your orders, so like you'd fill your form in and hand it back, and to approve your orders, you'd have to lick the page.
So it had your DNA, so it had your DNA on it.
And nice. What he used to do is he'd get clear nail polish and he'd paint it on, and then one of every sheet, which he'd randomly shuffle in, would have that stuff you put on your nails to stop yourself from sucking your thumb for the kids.
Oh.
So you'd be going, oh, and he'd say, oh dear, you seem to have found the faulty thing. And that would be it. You just died. You just licked the poisonous DNA thing.
Yeah, that's a... As a DM, you can do it because you don't have to worry about your players staying alive.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, when you're DMing a lot of things, you have to put them in situations where they're in peril, but they have to have a chance of getting out of it. In Paranoia, you don't have to give them the chance of getting out of it, which makes it, as a DM, a lot of fun. But you have to make sure that your players, the player base, understand that, and it is beer and pizza night.
Yeah.
Or low-calorie drinks and fruit.
Yes.
Yes, dear.
I wonder if we could make something up for low-calorie... You know, it's obviously a traitor.
Yeah, it's communist tendencies, you can tell.
Yes. All right. So that's. I think that's it.
Cool.
That's a couple of RPGs talked about. So until next time, I've been Mike.
I've been Lee.
And I've been Matt.
Bye.
Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.